All right, today I'm going to talk as usual for a little bit, and then I'll take your questions. And the topic of the conversation today is about how to assess a partner and their level of kind of readiness, willingness to do the work, to join you, etc. This conversation matters because a lot of people find themselves in a relationship with a seemingly resistant partner or someone who's not always up for the same things you are in terms of growth and development. So as you know, I talk a lot on this subject and it's pretty crucial. So here's how I'm going to talk about it from the lens of this therapeutic technique called motivational interviewing. And if you're familiar with that, you've probably heard about it. If you got any kind of psychology training in undergrad or grad school, or you're a therapist, coach, or something, you've probably heard this term. Or if you have been in the addiction world and are either have known someone with a strong addiction, like alcohol or drugs of some kind, the people helping them are really familiar with motivational interviewing. And what it essentially is assessing someone's level of motivation for change. That's kind of what motivational interviewing means. And the opposite of motivational interviewing is trying to help someone when they're not asking for it, and they're not ready, and they're not willing, and they want to continue to do their addiction, let's say. And we'll use different examples today. I like addiction because I'm sure we've all met or known someone in our lives who's struggled with an addiction, and we, being the helper relationship sensitive types, have been people that have been either tracking them or worried about them and tried to help them get sober, etc. And really that just leads to a lot of headaches and frustration and failure and a lot of expenses on your time and energy and your wallet. Parents really have spent, you know, probably upwards of billions of dollars on kids with addictions trying to help them. And it's mostly the addiction rates in terms of recovery are pretty dismal. I think AA has something like a 10% sobriety success rate. And even the very best addiction clinics, the relapse rate is high when they track people over the long haul. So it's pretty remarkable that someone can get sober and stay sober. And the people that do it, in my experience, are the people that want to do it. They're congruent. All of them says yes. So if you're with a partner, not necessarily with addiction, but who doesn't really want to do the work, or says they do, but they kind of, their actions don't match it, you need to kind of take a step back and really digest what I'm saying and eventually learn how to assess where they're at. So let me give you another example that I do when I work with couples. I'm not working with people much anymore privately, but when I do and have done is I would invariably meet with a couple. The man and woman would come in, sometimes two women would come in, and or two men, usually two women in my experience, the women I worked with. But they come in and they're like, one person is like desperate, they made the call, they're so frustrated, they're in a lot of pain, and they're like, help us. And the other person is seeing it from a different angle. They're like, it's not that big of a deal, we're kind of doing fine, but I'll come because you want me to come. And so what ends up happening if the healer, therapist, coach person isn't paying attention is they'll spend a lot of energy trying to draw out that person and help them, but there's an unconscious block there that this person maybe isn't even aware of, that they don't really want to do the work. They're here primarily for their partner or in fear because they don't want to lose the relationship, but they're not really there because they want to work on themselves. So this can lead to a lot of headaches in the sort of therapeutic setting, like an office, And that led to a lot of headaches for me. And I finally learned some version of motivational interviewing, and it changed the game for me. And what it did was, instead of spending time trying to hear them out while they complain and blame each other and try to get to the issue, and I was always trying to get to the real issue, and like spending session after session putting out fires, eventually it dawned on me, like, hey, this doesn't feel good. And I would just start giving that voice, and I'd say, hey, something feels off here. I don't know what it is, but I'm feeling really frustrated over here as I listen to you two. It seems like, Sue, you really want help here and you're open to my feedback. And Bob, you tend to get defensive and you're actually not wanting help. You think your way is working just fine, even though in my opinion it's not. You're identified with that stance. And when I would say it in a loving, caring way and somewhat neutral and just say, hey, this is just my observation, people tend to agree. And they go, huh, that seems true. That's how it feels. And then I would validate Bob's stance and say, dude, why are you here? It doesn't seem like you want to be here. Well, because she wants me to be here and it's supposedly going to improve our marriage. And I'm like, yeah, but no, let's get honest. Like, why are you really here? And like, do you actually think this is going to help you? No. Well, then why are you here? And it turns out just by being in the office, we identify that he's abandoning himself and betraying himself. And so then I would validate him and be like, how is that for you that you're abandoning yourself for her? Is that what you want to be doing? Well, no. Well, what if you just gave yourself permission to not come and say, no, I don't want to do this? Well, that'd feel great. Okay, well, then why don't you do that? And then he gets confronted with a new issue, which is like, well, shit. You mean I could actually be true to myself in this marriage? And then she is like psyched because she's like, yeah, I want you to be true to yourself. I actually don't want you to abandon yourself as much as my neurotic self is freaking out over here. I'd rather have you be honest and be true to you. So it opened up a whole new way of working with people. And I wouldn't go anywhere forward with the couple until we dealt with this fundamental issue. One of you is a little reluctant, a little resistant, a little reticent, a little unsure. And we have to sniff that out and then address it. And often I would send couples on their way and say, well, I can't work with you because you don't really want to be here. The only people that are going to get a result are people who really want to be here for themselves. And it's okay. There's no blame here. It's not wrong. One's not better than the other. It's just, if you want to go to the next level in your relationship, it requires work. If you think you can do it on your own, be my guest. I'm pretty sure you're smart enough. You've already tried a number of ways and it hasn't really worked out for you. But I think it's more important that you honor yourself. And then she, in this case, has to sit with that truth. And then we're dealing with this amazing, rich truth that's going on in their marriage that they hadn't been able to name before. So motivational interviewing, I call it MOVO a lot. It's just easier. Rather than push through or trying to help someone, drag someone up the mountain that doesn't really want to climb it, it's doing the same thing with our partners and then getting their world around that. So essentially what this looks like is you saying, honey, it seems like anytime I bring up therapy, Jason's class, a blog post, a book on working on our relationship, I notice a few things. And then you make factual observations. Your tone of voice changes. You won't look at me. You change the subject sometimes. And I'm okay with that. I just want to name what my experience is over here. And something's happening there. It seems like a part of you doesn't really want to do this. Is that true? Yes, that's true. I don't want to deal with it. I'm already working so hard in my life. I don't want more drama here. Okay, so I would rather have you just be really take a stand for that and what you feel is right and true and live into that than come over to my side and do something for me, because it won't work and it hasn't worked if whenever we try that. You don't want me to get upset with you. You don't want to get me to get mad or emotional. So then you X, Y, and Z, right? So what you're trying to do is see them without judgment or criticism on top of it. Just making an observation, a loving, caring observation, like, hey, here's what I notice. Are you open to a reflection? It just seems like you don't really want to do this. Because, and if he says, no, I do. Well, okay, I hear you. I know a part of you really does, honey. And so you validate that part of him does, or her, part of them wants it to be different, and they want to change, and they want to grow. And say, yeah, okay, I do see that, and you say that, and that is true, that part of you does. And it seems like the larger part of you, which is driving the bus here, doesn't want to do it. And I just want to say that's okay. It's going to have a big impact on me, but it's okay. Like, I just want to acknowledge what is true in our relationship and what is true for you and what is true for me. And we may not be aligned here, but I want to deal with that more than anything else. So you see what I'm saying? Instead of trying to get him or her somewhere else by dragging, pushing, manipulating, subtly suggesting things, we're naming the dynamic that's going on, just completely front and center, over and over, and saying, yep, here's our core thing. You want to go this way, I want to go that way. Here we are. How are we going to deal with this? And here's the impact. Here's how I feel, given that this is the truth. We're trying to seek entry here with a person and get their permission. And when people don't feel judged or criticized, they tend to open up. So if we see them in a loving way that says, hey, I see you. Here's what I notice. Part of you this, part of you that. And it's okay. People can let down their guard a little bit and they don't have to defend. And I'm not saying it's your job to be so skillful that they don't react. They're always going to react to some degree. And the more you see them and love them as they are, truly, the more people will find their own way. So back to the addiction metaphor, the kids that I saw get sober when I worked with adolescents who were heavy drug users were kids who finally felt loved by a presence outside of them and didn't have an agenda for them, like, get sober. Hey, man, it's okay. If you want to keep using every day, I love you. And I'll always love you, and I care about you. It hurts to see you hurt yourself like that, and I love you. That doesn't change anything for me. And I'm not going to actually help you until you come ask me, hey, I want some help here. And then I'll show up 100% for you. I'm just going to, for now, to take care of myself, I'm going to be on the sidelines just loving you from afar. And if you fall down enough times, you might want to reach out to me, and I'll be here for you. And if you want to keep living your life because in your worldview it works for you and you think you're fine, that's okay. I'm just going to take care of myself and I might take a step back from our relationship, right? Those people, kids and adults, are more likely to get sober or to get traction on their issue, whether it's addiction or something else. And it's hard. When we're personally impacted day in and day out, it's hard to not judge and criticize. So I do like to, as you know, encourage naming that out in the open. Hey, I'm judging and criticizing you, and I'm going to set that aside for now and see if I can actually just get you and be with you and see if I can observe you as you are without all my filters over here. And I might need someone to help me with that. I might need an outside mediator to just help me see you. Or I might need your help. And then the other thing is, when dealing with someone, what human beings tend to trust is congruency. When someone's words match their actions, match their behavior, that's a congruent person. That helps us trust. When someone says one thing and does another thing, that's incongruent, and we tend to mistrust and distrust there, which is so spot on and around honoring our sensitivity. It's like something feels off. That's often what we're feeling. And when our partner is being someone other than who they really are, we get annoyed. And we get triggered by them and their stuff. But we tend to be more like relaxed in our nervous system when someone is, even if they're being doing something hurtful to themselves or us, if they're being congruent about it, they're honest and they're aligned with their words and actions and body language, we're like, ah, it just feels so much better. That's why when an affair happens, what's more egregious than the actual act of the affair, it's the lie about the affair that really upsets people. I can't believe you didn't tell me. You were looking in me in the eyes saying, no, there's no one in my life. Everything's fine. You were looking me right in the eyes and telling me one thing, but then going and seeing her the same night. Like, that's in massive incongruency, right? That's where people get really hurt. It's not the affair itself, the fact that you slept with someone else. It's the lie about it, because it's deep incongruency. So one of the rules of thumb here with Movo is you want to, if there's more closure than openness in a person, in your partner, for example, if the part of them is more resistant than the part of them that is motivated to change and work on your relationship, name it, have it named, agree upon it, and drop it. Drop the, like, say, cool, I'm going to save my energy for someone who actually wants to grow and develop. And this is especially true if you're in a service position, like a coach or a healer of some kind, and you're trying to help someone who's struggling. It's a complete waste of your energy to coach someone or do therapy with someone who is more resistant than not. In my book. So there's a lot of people that will work with that. I won't. You know, I worked with court-ordered kids for a long time, forced treatment for many years, and it's you see very little change and transformation in those people because they're forced to be there, you know? It's like forced schooling on people. Force this, force that. It shuts down our intelligence, our aliveness from the inside, and we're not allowed to, like, have a choice there. And so anything we do is just to get the fuck out of there or get someone off our back or whatever. So the rule of thumb is, hey, honey, if you have more closure than openness, wow, that's where we're at in our relationship. Let's agree that that's what's going on, and I need to make some choices around that. Do I want to be patient and wait for you to get to have it shift so we can actually go somewhere, or do I want to move on? Another way of seeing them is part of them is a yes, part of them is a no. You want to try to identify that, okay, and help tease it out. And then if they want to work with someone, which they won't unless they're doing it for someone else, I help them identify the split inside, but they're probably not going to be open to that. Another layer here before I stop and take questions is the POS, the personal operating system. That, again, people are completely committed and inspired and motivated around what their highest value priority is in their life. They don't need someone to remind them to do that thing. And that is often lower down in terms of relationship and intimacy for if you're working with someone, if you're in a relationship with someone who's a little resistant, reluctant, or doesn't really want to, you know, be in the roots community or do the work or whatever. So again, our job is to get them and their values and what their priorities are and see them there and honor and acknowledge them there. And then really stand back and say, wow, we're really misaligned. And I don't know if this is going to work. Because remember, what I think in my experience dictates long-term relationship success is the shared context, the shared language, and the shared tools. It's just, you can make it work, but it's going to be a lot of extra struggle and teeth pulling and other things. All right, cool. All right, I'm going to pause there and take your questions, comments, shares, etc. So typing them, or ideally just raise your hand and I'll call on you. Welcome if you're just joining us. I think it's important that you go back and listen to the recording, as there's some good context for what we are talking about in terms of working with someone who's a little reluctant, and maybe you're just trying to assess out where they're at. Maybe they're not, but you're just trying to assess. So the questions, remember, can be related to what I just talked about, or they can be completely unrelated around your relationship life. Okay, Odile, you're up.
Hi.
Hi.
Ah, you can hear me.
Yes.
Cool. I'm actually here listening together with Martijn.
Okay.
And my computer, something happened, so I couldn't hear all of it, unfortunately. The last part I got from how much, or maybe if I'm, maybe you can tell me if I was right, but something up, how much you can ask your partner how much he's into growth and how much he's not, or?
You can do that. But whatever your goal is, let's say you want a different relationship with Martijn, you can say, hey, I want a different relationship, like, whatever, are you up for that? And he could say yes, and you could say, I don't believe you. And then you could start to get together. You want to basically find what's true. If I'm being totally honest, here's what's true for me. And if you're being totally honest, honey, what's true for you? Do you really want to work on this or not? And in what capacity and at what pace? So you basically get a shared reality around that you both can agree upon about what's true.
Somehow it, or maybe if I'd ask it like that, like it feels like the truth for me, like it feels to me like this, that it would be better. It just seems that the conversation for me is, I would say something that I feel that's going on, and then it's like, yeah, but you feel the same, and I'm like, well, no, and then I start to defend, and then, or I start to explain, and then I'm like, I don't know, and within no time, the whole conversation, I get lost in something that's, or it's not about it, and then I can't. I don't know.
Yeah. So that might be what I'm asking you to do with him, might be a little much. Is that what you're saying? Because you get kind of derailed pretty quick.
Yeah. I just can't seem to for me, this is my experience, that Martijn is so good at talking or turning stuff around, and I'm like, huh? And what? And I just completely lose my sharpness, and I forget what it's all about.
Yeah, so can you see how that could be helpful to you, to have a partner like him?
Yes, certainly,
How is that helpful in that example you just shared?
Well, I often think of, like, my whole family being all very intellectual, and everyone's really good with words, and I'm always silent. And this is something that is, yeah,
So what's the lesson for you?
Well, Today, I was thinking the only way I can really stay with myself is if I stay in touch with my anger.
Okay.
And
And how is that for you?
yeah, I find that difficult to do.
To stay in touch with your anger?
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm hearing that that's a place you could find your voice.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a stepping stone on the way to finding your voice. And he's helping you by being his intellectual self and triggering you into the pattern of being quiet and letting someone change your words and then collapsing or shutting down or getting angry and then getting quiet. Whatever the pattern is, you're trying to have a voice, speak your truth, stand up for it, not collapse, not let someone else talk for you and be understood in your clarity, right? Yeah, so that's like the work. Some version of that is the work for you in that relationship. And so again, it's helpful to have someone like him for you because this is the place to work it out. You could definitely find your voice if you fired him tomorrow and you were single, you could find your voice, but that's not where the rubber meets the road, you know, it's in a relationship.
Whatever it feels like, oh, it feels like pulling on a dead horse, but I don't know if that's a Dutch expression or.
No, we have some version of that over here. Beating a dead horse is how we say it here. And are you saying that is he the dead horse or you're the dead horse?
He is.
Okay, no offense, Martin. We're just kind of getting honest here. I mean, none of the you got to remember, none of this is personal. So if he takes that personally, that's his shit he has to deal with. But this isn't personal. Do you get that? Like you're going to beat a dead horse or pulling a dead horse so long as it takes you to use your voice and be stand up for yourself and be really clear with people. Like you might have to shout at the sky sometimes. You might have to shake him a little bit. You might have to get in his face sometimes. I don't know, but it's to continue to find yourself more than anything. And the anger, remember, is an expectation that he behave a certain way, that your parents behave a certain way. So you're angry because they won't live up to your expectations. Well, yeah, you're supposed to be angry when you expect other people to live up to your fantasy.
True. So we are having this fight about passiveness.
Pessimist?
To be passive,
Oh, passive, yep.
not taking action.
Yep.
And
Because you're more passive, or he is. Who's the
He
passive
is.
one?
And I thought about it long and hard, or and it's not, I mean, it's something that I not don't really want to change. It's not like I appreciate a lot of the things that are in the not taking action, or I don't know if it's, yeah. It's just, it's if, I don't know if this is still expecting, but then it's like, that's fine, it's fine. It's just that if he comes with expectations, then I get really like, yeah, but if you don't want to do anything about it and you don't want to say anything, why do you want any results then? Like if you then don't expect anything back from me either. It's like,
This is like your complaint about him.
yes.
Okay, I'm following you.
So, and then, yeah, I just end up in this place where I think, okay, so don't expect him to take action, which in a good moments I'm perfectly fine with. And then, but then he could say, like, you know, when he was with friends, two friends who recently got divorced, and he was saying, like, anyway, like they were with someone, or they were with their ex-partner, and he was, and Martijn was saying how we are, or it felt to him that it was a bit like the way we are together, but that somehow he sort of had accepted it, that it's the way it is. And
Okay.
then like, well, that's, yeah. Okay, so accept it, and then let's not change anything.
Yeah,
Very
so
passive. So, but he doesn't like, but then
but
it doesn't seem
his
like.
style, his way frustrates you. Is that right? How he does things, like with the passive things and the then don't expect to get a result if you're not willing to take action kind of thing, that frustrates you.
Yes.
Right. And okay. And so is there a question here?
The question was, when you were saying to assess like how much he's willing to change or not change, but do something or grow in the relationship or do something about the rela do with the relationship.
Yeah.
I'm just, the thing is, it feels like all of the energy has it, you know, there is progress and some and things are happening and through your course, and then, but it just takes so much energy out of me. It's like, oh God, finally. And then I'm just exhausted, and but there is progress, and then I'm thinking, okay, but you know, the next tiny, mini step will take place in another 10 years, you know, and then
Yeah,
how tired am I going to be then?
and you're tired 'cause you're really kind of trying to help him, trying to cheer him on or something. And you work really
Well,
hard.
no, I stop, you know, I've got into the expectations and the hopes and seen what I, you know, what I've been doing. And it feels as though I just wanna get to the truth. And somehow
Okay,
I can't get him to tell the truth.
let's get his take real quick. Martin, are you there? Okay.
Hi.
Hi. We're talking about you.
I noticed.
I know. So, what's the truth here about your whether it's passive, like our partners tend to see something in us like a grain of truth in our behavior. Our mannerisms and how we live life, they tend to be onto something. So, what is she onto that's just true?
Well, it's true that a lot of time you can't really see my commitment to growth by my actions.
Yeah. And why, do you know why that is? Do you know what? It sounds like you have two parts of you, like all of us. Like there's a part of you that is probably really committed in at times or in certain moments in certain areas of your life, and there's another part of you that's not, right? Is that
I would
true?
say apparently, because it's not supported by actions that much, and I feel that I'm really quickly caught in being triggered.
Okay.
And then I know that it's a strategy of me when I feel not seen, or when she, for me, withdraws or is disconnected, then I find it very hard to not take it personally.
Yeah.
And
okay. And let me back up one step. Can we agree then that there's a part of you that, given your actions or lack thereof, doesn't really want to do whatever she's asking you to do, and then there's a part of you that does. You have two parts.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it fair? Can you give that to her? Can you say, yes, honey, you're right, that I sometimes am, my actions don't follow my words, and I don't follow through because there's some resistance I have internally, and sometimes I do follow through. Both are true. Can you just give that to her and say, yeah, honey, that's true?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yes. And Odile, does that feel good that he's like at least acknowledging that?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's all we're doing right now, right? Is just getting to what's true. Yes, it's true that sometimes I'm big hat, no cattle is kind of the saying I like to say here in the States, in the West. You know, you're all talk and no action sometimes. I'm that way, Martin, with things that I claim I care about. Remember, one of my big examples has been exercise. Yeah, I care about a healthy body and stuff, but I'm not willing, I wasn't willing to go exercise 5 days a week. So my actions don't match the claim. So all that says is part of me does, and part of me is a yes, and part of me is a no, and now I have an internal conflict that I got to work out if I want the result. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're just saying that's true, right? In you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's true about what? Is it true about your relationship? Is it true about your job? Is it true about, like, where is it true?
Well, it's true in me.
Right. In what subjects in life, though? When it comes to your marriage or your relationship, or when it comes to your job? Exercise, money, you know, what are the categories where that's true? You have two parts, a yes and a no.
Right. Well, if you look at the passive thing, I would say in the relationship and exercise. And in my job, I think I'm pretty assertive and on top.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm guessing you are assertive in the places that you are really motivated around. And the places where you have more fear and blocks, unconsciously, you're going to be going to a more passive stance. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so all you're saying, you know, if I'm you, I would say to Odile, hey, thanks for the feedback. I'm glad you see that too in me. And I would appreciate it if you would both challenge me there in a loving way that I can hear and support me there. Both. That's love. Love isn't just, hey, don't ever bring that up again. She's seeing a weak spot of yours and she doesn't like it, right? And she knows that you could grow there and she wants to help you. But how she does it isn't very effective. Yeah? Is that fair?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So you just say that, you know, like, hey, thanks, and here's how I prefer the feedback. Because I do want help here. I don't want help here. Actually, I'm going to go see a specialist or a coach. I don't want your help. I'm going to just keep working on this on my own.
Yeah, I promise to do some work on the relating my core strategy to things that happened at home when I was younger.
Right, but before you do that work, you got to work on the block that prevents you from doing the work. You can't go do the homework until you got to deal with the block that keeps sabotaging you from doing it. Sometimes we just have to push through, but other times there's a block. We have an unconscious block that we keep avoiding the thing that we claim that is important to us. And that turns into passivity. It turns into avoidance. It turns into saying one thing and doing another. It turns into, you know, all kinds of things. So this is the MOVO stuff, the motivational interviewing. You got to do that with yourself and say, okay, well, apparently I have something in the way and I need to find out what that is and work on that first. Then I'll go do the homework.
But wouldn't that be, because wouldn't that be the same thing?
No, not necessarily. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not.
Okay.
You got to find out, you have to know what it is. You know, for example, one of the things I had in the way for me with exercise, I have many layers around health and exercise and kind of fitness. One of the first layers I uncovered was that prevented me from doing the work there was I was unconsciously telling my dad to fuck off because he always told me that I better be in shape and you need to exercise. And you got to, he was kind of shooting me, putting his values on me all the time, his POS. And my rebellion in my adolescence was to say, I don't want to be like you, fuck off. So I won't exercise. So here I am, you know, decades later telling him to fuck off unconsciously. It's actually hurting myself. So I had to uncover things like that, right? That were in the way. And it's most often psychology. I'm learning that more than anything else, it's the mind. It's some psychological block. So anyway, I want to just give someone else a chance to ask a question if they have a question before we end today. So I hope that helps you guys a little bit.
Sure.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for starting this off.
Yeah, you got it. I'm glad you're both here. It's sweet to see a couple in here and being vulnerable, sharing your relationship with us like that. So thank you. Jennifer, I hear you cutting in and out, but it sounds like it wasn't an issue for us that was talking back and forth there. Okay, who else has got a question here? Comment, question. And Jennifer's just saying, I really love listening to the two of them and me do that. So, cool. Glad that served. I mean, we could go, right? We could just go for a couple hours there and help Martin and Odile get a little more traction there. And I think that there was enough of a nudge. Yeah. Okay, I'd love to hear from anyone else that's got a question or a comment. Come on, people. There you go, Jennifer. All right, what's up? Jennifer.
Hi, Jason.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. I don't really have a strong question. I'm sitting here thinking, sort of resonating on something you just said to Martin about the way I'm hearing it is that something about getting clear about a certain piece, like getting clear about what's in the way before working on maybe whatever that next piece is. And I'm kind of wondering about, I mean, we get all this material from you, and I do feel like there's a layered aspect for me where there is some resistance, like the benefits exercise or something like that. I still have a block with that. It still is murky for me, and I seem to create, like I'd much rather listen to one of your webinars or read something than do that. And
yeah.
So you know, that must be telling me something about myself, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's telling us that you have a block. And, you know, I'm with you. It depends on the area of my life, but I have the same thing. And I would rather do something else.
Yeah, and I think I justify, like, oh, but it's still in this realm that I really want to work on, you know, and really interested in, but it's a piece of it, so.
Well, that's the claim. But then when we look at your behavior, we have to be honest and say, well, there's a part of me that isn't totally on board yet.
Yeah.
I'm not in enough pain. I'm not motivated enough. I don't want it bad enough. And that's really important to just get honest. So if I, for example, if I'm writing and I have a writing project that a blog post that I want to get done, the claim is, ooh, I can't wait to get this out and get this done. Sometimes the behavior is I'll go to Facebook or my email or anything, but go back to the blog post and finish it because I reached in that blog post a stuck point where I got a little stuck. And I don't want to come back and have to feel stuck. And so I'd rather do the instant gratification thing and get a quick hit of dopamine somewhere else than to work through the stuck spot.
Yeah.
That's just human behavior. You know, that's in every area of my life. Mm-hmm. And we don't really change until we're, again, aligned and congruent with where we want to go. And we set ourselves up. We even trick ourselves sometimes into doing things just to get it done because it's better for us than sitting on our ass. So sometimes it's about pushing through the exercise. And, you know, I've done many lists of 200 benefits, for example, and I get to 175 and I'm like, that's good enough. I want anything to get out of the, to get off the train, you know, get me out of here.
Yeah.
And when I finally reach 200 or whatever the number is, it feels so good because I accomplished the goal. I said what I was going to do, and that gives me confidence in myself. But when I bail on myself all the time and that becomes the habit, you know, it doesn't help my self-esteem. It doesn't help other people trust me. I'm incongruent again. My wife gets annoyed. You know, the ripple effect is kind of big.
Yeah. So what I'm noticing as you're saying that, like, I'm actually really good with my word and all that stuff to everyone, but maybe not so much to myself.
Yeah, so that's something to look at.
Yeah.
You know, probably there's a strategy there. That's what you did as a girl, and right. you come last or whatever, and, you know, it's like you could change that.
Right.
But it would mean saying no to other people and pissing people off.
Yeah. Well, and even more than that, it feels like, because I feel like I'm pretty balanced in my ability to say yes or no to other people. But for myself, yeah, I think it is that it's more about this incongruency with myself. So I guess identifying that and then, you know, it's weird. It's not like I wanted to say, okay, well, I mean, I do want to say, okay, sit down and do it. But I have this thing about, okay, so there's a thing about I work so damn hard anyway, so, like, now I have to work harder, or...
Yeah, you do. You got to, like, the areas that you want to have a result in your life, you got to work hard.
Right.
And just like anything you've done really well at in your life, you probably, you know, maybe it was a combination of some natural ability, but you also worked hard. And there's no way to get around working hard.
Okay, yes. So I need help again. Okay. Understanding this benefits exercise.
Okay, in terms of context?
Yeah, it's so weird. You'll do an example, and I feel like I get it, and then I go to sit down and do it, and I'm like, what? I don't understand how to do this. So that seems to happen. That's happened like half a dozen times for me. So there's some block here that I don't know why I'm not getting it.
Okay. Well, just to review the context briefly, remember we're trying to balance things and get to love and gratitude for whatever happened.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the point, is seeing that even if I was hit by my father at age 3 or left by my mom at age 9 or abused by my uncle at age 15, that in our perception, we see it as a problem and as bad, and we're missing the other side of how it was helpful for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can trust life. It helps us trust in a deeper way that everything in my life is conspiring to help me and support me grow and become who I am. Everything, without exception.
Okay.
And benefits is the intellectual part of the exercise that then, if we do it correctly, translates into rewiring our brain and our body, and our heart opens because our heart and our being gets the profundity of whatever it is we experience. Like, oh my God, I'm seeing a fuller picture now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was hurtful and it was helpful. And I'm thankful that it happened because look at who it's made me become and who I am now.
Okay. And I feel like all that is true, and I get that, and yeah, and say
and
that.
And some part of you might not, and you want to probably be honest and say, well, some part of me doesn't get it yet, and it's somewhere in the body. It's some lockdown that still prefers a lopsided perception because you want to be a victim, because you want to see it your way. Anytime I'm not getting it there, that's what's going on. I'm just stuck in my anger or my hurt, or she did this and therefore fuck you. And I'm identified with it to the point where I'm stuck.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah. Sometimes when we're really stuck and we really can't get past an issue, I go see someone. You know, my friend Lisa works with me, and I just like, Lisa, help me knock this one out. Like, and she'll, because sometimes I just can't quite see the thing, and then she'll give me the questions just in just the right way, and I'm like, oh my God, okay, thank you. That there it is, boom.
Mm-hmm.
Or my friend Will, you know, I have a couple friends that we do this kind of stuff with. So it's helpful to have outside support sometimes when we're stuck.
Yeah. So the benefits exercise, though, it's really like just something you said just recently or just now about, so it's the intellectual process that helps kind of rewire the brain. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, if you want to really want to get into it, I would go read DeMartini's Breakthrough Experience, that book.
Okay.
He explains the whole thing there.
Okay.
Yep. Just read that. There's a couple sections in there where or go to a Breakthrough Experience by him, even better, to actually get his live take on it. Because he understands the human physiology and the brain way better than I do, and he has a really beautiful way of articulating it. But yeah, it's a combination of the brain and the body, and it can't be just like a lot of people do the benefits and they'll go, yeah, okay, cool, I got it. But then they're the very next day, they're pissed at their mom or whatever. And it's like, no, you didn't get it. You got it intellectually. That's not enough. You got to get it all the way down into your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can feel that, like there is a level I get it, but then, yeah, there's some place I'm not getting it. I guess I can't tell right now if it's intellectually or otherwise, but something's missing here. So,
yeah. So do the exercise, go a little slower and see if you can find out where you get stuck and see if you can be more honest and say, okay, apparently, and just give yourself permission to be like, I'm mad still. I'm hurt still. And you'll start sniffing out like, where is this? Where's the no? I'm still okay. Identified.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. yeah, actually, that's really helpful right there. Okay. Because that opens something where I can go, oh, okay. Feel into that. Yeah. All right.
Cool.
I'll try again.
yeah. Keep at it. Thanks. Matthew, good to have you here. Angela. So, any last comments before we stop? Thanks again for your flexibility. Yeah. Odile, did you have another comment?
Hi.
Hi.
Just one more question about the benefit exercise. Could you say just one more, a little bit more about focusing on the drawbacks?
If you
focus on the helpful and the benefit part easily.
Yeah. So,
and you're like, I feel peaceful, and I'm like, yeah, and you know, and thankful the way it is, but then I lose all of the drawbacks, and then could you say something about that?
Well, like you could do a thorough way to do the exercises. Okay, mom hit me at age 9 and it ruined my life, right? That's the story. So I go stack up the benefits to mom hitting me and how it helped me. And then already I've probably stacked up the drawbacks to that experience. Like, well, I felt terrible about myself. My mom and I had a terrible relationship. I felt insecure at school. And, you know, you could list all the drawbacks if you want. But most people are so identified with the story, they kind of already have the list, and it's not very challenging to create the list, but you're certainly welcome to do that. Then, so that, you want to get an equal amount of 20 and 20 or 50 and 50 or 100 and 100, if you want to do it that way. Then you flip it around and say, okay, if my mom didn't hit me, what would be the drawbacks? It's another way of seeing the benefits. If she didn't, quote, ruin my life or hit me at age 9 and abuse me, what would be the drawbacks? If she was like the perfect mother, all-knowing, loving, super affectionate, held my hand, nurtured me, guided me in all the sweet ways, what would be the drawbacks? Well, I wouldn't have this innate ability to track people. I wouldn't, you know, have had to be scrappy at school and like make that friend, and then that ultimately helped me get into college. I wouldn't have had to, I would have been enabled potentially. I would have, you know. Does that help?
Yes. Although I'm struggling still with how to weigh things. It just comes and goes, and I feel angry, and or I feel thankful, and.
Well, a lot of that's your emotions, and we're not talking about emotions here. We're talking about coming to just gratitude in the heart, and it's a moment. It's not like you stay grateful for weeks. It's a moment about that particular thing, and we can also get to a place of like being grateful for our childhood being the way it was. We can have an overarching like gratitude there. If we've done enough of these type of exercises, it starts to bleed into like just being totally grateful for how you got served up, what you got served up.
Yeah, but I was also thinking about doing the exercise like now, for not like in situations now.
Yeah, you do it now. It's the same thing, though. It's like the mastery is like how quickly you can see the other side and how quickly you're grateful for whatever just happened. Car accident yesterday, fired from your job last night. Martin tells you to fuck off and wants to leave you. It's like, how quickly can you get to, how's this helping me?
Right. Yeah.
But not bypassing the true emotional impact of like, wow, I just got punched in the face or the gut or my heart. And you're feeling that too. You're feeling all of that while doing your best to see how even this hurtful thing is here to help you.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, good one. Okay. Nice, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. And 2 weeks, we'll be back on. I should have a new website within 2 weeks. It's supposed to happen next week, but we're running into a couple snags. And that means why that matters to you is because the Roots community is going to be better organized in the back end in terms of where the recordings are. And it's just going to tighten up and... And then there might be some new functionality depending on your feedback. So, okay. Thanks all. Have an awesome weekend.